Never mind, I'm a busy man. Look, I'm an agent. Who are you?
Beethoven, sir.
You'll have to change it. What have you got then? Is it commercial? If not, why not?
I've got a tune, sir. It's a song, and I've not got any words.
Is it R&B, folk, minuet, gavotte? Who cares? So let's hear it. Can you whistle?
Well, I've brought along a few friends to play it for you.
Ah, good. Well, give us your song then. Come on, swing it. Let's have it.
Eins, zwei, drei.
Well, that's a load of old rubbish, isn't it? And mind you never can tell. Tchaikovsky does it. Why not you? Of course, the arrangement's wrong. What's in there?
20 violins, 10 violas, 8 cellos, 4 basses and a brass section.
Try it on guitar. That's more like it. That's more like it. Now jazz it up a bit. Come on, jazz it up. Give it a bit of rhythm. That's good. It's good. It's good. It's coming. It's coming. Hey, I'll tell you what's wrong.
What?
The tune. Try it going up. Try it going up.
Ta ta ta
ta ta ta ta ta ta ta.
I like it.
Yes, it's coming. It's coming. Wait a minute. I've got it. Ta 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 ta
ta ta ta ta ta ta
ta ta ta ta ta ta.
Once again, the Ludwig van Prune tune spotlights the talents of Timbrook Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall and Bill Oddie. And here, towering under the microphone, is your own, your very own, John Otto Cleese.
I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Again. Oh, I'd love to be alone in the country.
John?
Yes?
I'm with you.
I'd love to be alone in the country.
But John, you brought me with you.
I didn't. You hid in the back.
But you must have noticed.
Not at all. It's a very large tandem.
But John, when we fell off going down the stairs... You must have seen me.
I thought you were a hitchhiker.
But I'm your wife. You must have recognized me.
I didn't, Mary.
Why not?
Oh, because you were disguised as a cactus.
Oh, John. John. Talk to me. Say something to me. Say you hate me. Say I'm ugly.
Which?
Say I'm ugly.
You're ugly.
You're only saying that. You don't really mean it. You don't care. You never think about me. Up and down all night, warming the milk, mashing the rusks, all the crying and the bed wetting.
Yes, I know.
I wouldn't mind if we had a baby.
Well, I'm sorry, but I prefer bisons.
John, why don't you admit it? You don't love me anymore.
All right, I admit it.
John... Once we had something that was pure and wonderful and good. What's happened to it?
You spent it all.
That's all that matters to you, isn't it? Money. I despise you. Do you hear me? I hate you. I don't know how I've been able to stand it. I suppose it's because I love you. I don't know. I do love you, John. I love you more than I can say. I need you, John. Please, John, don't look at photographs of nude women while I'm talking to you.
Oh, all right, but... I know you know.
You know?
Yes.
Oh, God. John.
Yes?
What do you know?
Well, I could be wrong.
You mean about me and Nigel?
Oh, I was wrong. I thought it was Rupert.
You're right. It is Rupert. I can never remember names.
Anyway, I do know about last Friday.
Last Friday?
Yes. He was in my bed, wasn't he?
How did you know?
He kept pushing me out.
You mean you were there too?
You didn't even notice? Oh, God.
John. John. Try to love me.
No, Mary, it's no good. You somehow managed to hurt everyone you love.
Well, I'll take the cactus skin off.
No, Mary, look. There's something I've been meaning to tell you.
What?
Cardinal Richelieu died in 1642.
All right, so Mother was wrong. But can't we forget the past? I mean, that's all history now. Don't let's dig it up again.
You never liked me being an archaeologist, did you?
I never said that.
You'd have been happier if I'd sharpened knives or sold ferrets.
Keep George out of this.
No, I'm not going to keep George out of this. If you had to have a lover, why did it have to be a ferret seller? Blasted ferrets all over the house for months. Why couldn't it have been the budgerigar man? At least budgerigars can sing beautifully. I can still remember waking up in the morning and hearing all those ferrets singing. It used to drive me mad. Always the same tune.
Well, that's all over now. Can't we forget it? I mean, couldn't we start all over again? I mean, go back and begin from the beginning.
I suppose we could try.
Please, John.
All right. Oh, how I love to be alone in the country. How I love to be alone in the country.
But, John, you...
It's time now for another in the series, Stories from Shakespeare, told by David Pushoff.
Hello, children. Now, gather round and I'll tell you all a tale. Once upon a time, and not so very long ago, there lived in a very cold place called Denmark a young fellow by the name of Hamlet. He lived with his mother, Elsie, and his wicked stepfather, Norman, in a great big palace called Elsie North. Now, Hamlet was a good boy and loved his mother. But he was very jealous of his wicked stepfather, the King of Denmark, no less. And so, one day, Hamlet decided to do away with his wicked stepfather. And that night, he told his mother about it. She was astounded. Oi, oi, she cried. Is this my little boy? But Hamlet had made up his mind already. And so he cunningly got hold of some deadly, undetectable poison from the delicatessen on the corner and put it in a glass of wine. But who should drink the wine but his own mama? What confusion! People running to and fro, as like as not. And Hamlet's girlfriend Ophelia jumping in the river. And did she have problems? And so Hamlet picked up a sword with the poisoned point, which was lying around, and stabbed his wicked stepfather. But it just wasn't his lucky day. Hamlet accidentally scratched himself with the poisoned sword, and that was that. Well, children, next week I'll tell you the story of Macbeth, another murder story. And nobody murders stories like I do.
We are now interrupting the program with news of an unhappy event. We are deeply grieved to announce that tomorrow at 12 o'clock midday, the Earth is due to be destroyed by falling into the sun. First, the Prime Minister's reaction. The nation as a whole is taking the news calmly. Since the Earth is due to be destroyed at midday, tomorrow will be a day of mourning. For first reactions from Fleet Street, over to what the papers say.
Well, several of today's papers lead with the story of the world's destruction. Typical headlines are the Mirrors.
Wow, which bikini weather?
And the express?
Save our royal family.
Owing to the news of the world's impending destruction, the BBC announces a change in its programmes for tonight. At 9 o'clock, the Prime Minister will address the nation, if he can be found in time. And now, in place of our advertised programme, 24 hours, we have a special programme, 12 hours.
And first of all, we've been asked to ask you not to panic.
Panic!
And now, sport. Over to the president of the FA.
The two semi-finals of the FA Cup have been brought forward and will be played at 8 o'clock this evening. The final will be played at 10:30 tomorrow morning. There'll be no extra time.
Well, while we were hearing that report, a listener has rung in to say that he's just heard the last cuckoo. And now, Darcy Fitch.
When he heard the news today, walking down Tottenham Court Road with his banner, Mr. Fred Peer, chairman of the End of the World Is at Hand Society, died of shock.
And that is the end of the news. I'm sorry, I'll read that again. That is the news of the end. There are plenty of songs about the joys of eating. But how about a song to help people slim? Here from Bill Oddie and the Boys is a cautionary tale.
Uncle Henry bought himself some teeth the other day, and he was so excited he got carried right away. He was chewing day and night, chomping everything in sight. He even ate the furniture and half a dog as well. I tell you, Uncle Henry soon put on an awful lot of weight. He was up to 16 stone, and as a rule, he's only 8. When we rolled him on the scale, its little face went pale, and a tiny voice inside was heard to murmur, very faint, "Shake it off,
take it off,
shake it off,
take it off.
No, you can't be seen in public, not like that. Now, I know it may seem ruthless, but you were better toothless. Now, everybody says you're far too fat. Well, Lulu was a stripper and she had just what it takes. In generous proportions, built on lemon juice and steaks. And when she needed stuffing, instead of eating muffin, she'd have one of those rolls that when you bite into the crust, there's nothing. But our Lulu dropped our diet sheet and went astray. She started eating bread and buns and grew a bit each day. Till one night in her dance, she showed such a vast expanse that as she went to drop the lot, she heard a fella say, "Take it off!
Take it off!
Take it off!
Take it off!
Oh, you can't go out in public, not like that.
Without your trousers.
Now, blimey, look at you. You've got enough for two. And everybody says you're far too fat. All together, take it off!
Take it off!
Take it off!
Take it off.
Oh, you can't go out in public, not like that.
Without
your trousers. You can keep your mashed potato. Just give me my vibrator.
Set among the desolate Yorkshire moors stands an ominous cluster of grey stone buildings whose walls have withstood the ravages of the centuries. From this grim fortress, none have ever been known to escape. For this is Grimbody Keep, one of England's largest public schools. This is the setting for today's classic story, Tim Brown's School Days.
Grimbody Keep. What happy memories I carry in my heart of that grey, moss-covered, crumbling ruin, the headmaster, Mr. Thatcher. I recall the friends of my youth who stood beside me in times of trouble and never lifted a finger to help. Oh, and I remember Betty, the milkmaid, who was so dear to all of us boys, though only half price to the masters. One of my happiest recollections is of cooking by an open fire till I was quite done on both sides. Oh, golden memories indeed. But let me take you back with me to that moment long ago when I stood, a fresh-faced, apple-cheeked young lad, before the gates of Grimbody Keep for the very first time.
Hello?
I said.
Young,
he said,
fellow, I have to keep the door shut on account of the wolves.
Surely there aren't any wolves out on the moors?
Bless ye, no, sir, they're inside. Headmaster keeps them for amusement. He sets them on the matron every now and again for a bit of a laugh.
Oh, I see. Are you one of the masters here?
Bless ye, no, sir.
Well, what is your position?
I'm usually hunched up like this. First of all, you must go and see Mr. Thatcher, the headmaster. You like him. He's a regular gentleman. Takes castor oil twice a day. Now, come here. This is his study, so in you go and good luck.
Come in, whoever you are. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha.
He chortled.
Come in, dear boy.
He said.
Come in, he repeated. Shut the door behind you. We don't want Brutus to escape now, do we?
Is Brutus your dog?
No, he's the Latin master. Well, what a clean-limbed, healthy young lad you are, to be sure. But we'll soon put that right. Now then, what's your name?
Tim Brown, sir.
Brown, eh? Well, I'm sure we'll be chums. You'll live in room 13. It's a single room. But I'm afraid you'll have to share. Still, I'm sure you won't mind. The other 25 don't.
That night, I lay awake, looking through the dormitory window and wishing I was inside. Oh, next morning, it was time for our history lesson with old Mr. Totteridge, who was a little hard of hearing.
Good morning, boys.
Good morning, Mr.
Oh, dear, they can't have arrived yet. Well, never mind. I'll carry on without them. Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll carry on. That's it, yes. I'll carry on without them. Yes.
Please, sir, we're here.
There you are. I was going to carry on without you, you know. But as you're here, I won't bother. Goodbye.
Sir, tell us about William the Conqueror.
Ah, yes. Now, there was a great lady. I knew her, you know. She was a very absolutely marvelous. She was a very, very good friend, a friend of mine. And I was taking her, I well remember, I was taking her today, I was going to take her to dinner one night, and I'm not boring you, am I?
It was 2 hours later when we filed out of the classroom. It took us that long to get through the bars. As we returned to schoolhouse, a freckled-faced young lad took my elbow and ran off with it. I caught up with him and he introduced himself.
Hello, my name's Dobkins Minor. You must be Tim Brown, the new boy. Let's slope off to the tuck shop. I expect Mrs. Greystone will be glad to meet you.
Wizard, come on.
The school tuck shop was a wonderland to my youthful gaze, full of marvellous sweeties who sat around in their underwear. Mrs. Greystone produced 2 huge cakes, 1 chocolate and 1 strawberry. I had a bit of the chocolate and Dobkins had a bit of the other. Suddenly, the door burst open and a tall, rugged boy with dark, evil hair and a broken voice swaggered in. It was Flashman, the school bully.
Sir, what are we here? What's your name, Pipsqueak?
Tim Brown.
Can you fight brown?
No, but I can see red.
That's not very funny.
Well, I'm rather nervous.
Look here, Flashman. I'm not going to let you hit Brown before my face.
All right, I'll hit your face first. come on, Brown.
No, no, fighting is wicked.
No, it isn't.
It is the way I fight. Take that.
Oh! You bit my nose. That's not fair. Right. Right, you're in for a good hiding. I'll put you in the broom cover. They'll never find you there.
Now, come along, boys. I made some tea, so why don't you have a cup and say you're sorry? Believe me, when you tasted it, you will be sorry.
Oh, all right, I apologize, Brown.
With that, Flashman spun on his heel, drilling a neat hole in the floor through which he fell. I was moved by his apology, but something he said as he left made me doubt his sincerity.
I'm a liar.
But no sooner had he left than a red-faced, well-built man entered. I knew at once that this was none other than Rudyard Kipling. But I was wrong.
Good heavens, it's Mr. Trimfettle, the games master.
Yes, I say hello, Mrs. G. I say I'm sorry to bother you and all that. But I'm a little short of cash. I wonder, could I touch you for 5 bob? Now, you see, the trouble is, we're playing Harrow, or rugby, rugger, or soccer on Saturday. Or it may be cricket. Anyway, point is, we haven't got a team, you see, and I'm in a terrible state, and I just don't know what to do with myself.
Please, sir.
Don't say it.
I can play rugger.
Can you? I say that's first rate. Now, look. Now, look, I suppose we'll need one or two other chaps to make up the team.
Rugger teams don't wear makeup, sir.
No. Well, I know so little about games. I did extra singing when I was at school.
And so we started at once. It was quite a job, as most of the team had never played before. But I hit upon the ruse of putting itching powder in their beds, and they were soon up to scratch. Before the match, Flashman gave the team a pep talk.
All right, you snivelling bunch of lily-livered poltroons. We'll be playing on our own home ground, so that's an advantage to us, especially with regard to the landmines. Now, try to lure them down the pavilion end as much as possible. They can't possibly find their way back through the swamp. Well, when you meet Harrow on the field, we're going to go out there and lick them. I know it's unhygienic, but it's only polite. All right, lads, go out there and give them all you've got. Ah, Headmaster and Mr. Tottery.
Well, Flashman, I must say they look a very fine team. Don't you think so, Mr. Tottery?
What? Yes, a very fine team.
There they go, Cornstall. Show them what you're made of. That's not what I meant, Doc James. Come on, school!
Come on, school!
Look at Tim Brown. Look at him go.
It's all right. He'll be back in a minute.
Yes, there he is. He's got the ball. He's beaten one man. He's beaten two. My word, he knows how to use that cane.
He's running down the wing.
It's an open goal.
Shoot, man, shoot.
Shoot.
He scored.
Well done.
What a goal.
Shoot. He scored, Mr. Tottridge. He scored.
Funny game, Canasta.
What a match it was. With the cheers of the crowd roaring in our ears, our 11 played like 50. Actually, we were 69. After it was over, we were all assembled in the main hall, and after we had been put together again, the headmaster swept in through the door and, putting aside his broom, stepped onto the platform.
Boys, I'm very proud to be standing here before you. I never thought I'd sober up in time. Today we won the game by 57 goals to nil. A magnificent effort. Hooray! Pity the other team didn't turn up, but there it is. Hero of the moment is, of course, our captain, Tim Brown. And now we'll all sing the school song. I see Mr. Tottridge is at the piano, looking immaculate in white tie and tails. Insofar as the piano can look immaculate in white tie and tails. Boys, let us sing.
Yeah.
the Angus Prune Tune brings to an end another edition of I'm Sorry I Read That Again, which was written this week by Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, Eric Idle, and Bill Oddie. Those taking part were Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, and Bill Oddie, who also wrote the songs. The music was provided by Dave Lee, with arrangements by Leon Cohen. And the whole show was produced by Humphrey Barclay. No flowers, by request. So that's it until the same time next week, when once again, John Otto Cleese will say in stentorian tones...
In stentorian tones.